You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
Brian is someone who seems to be about invitation. Earlier today, I read his interview. It's quite some time ago. His interview with Ellen MacArthur, who you might remember sailed around the world, broke the world record at the time. It's a very simple interview. He asks very simple questions on paper, but there's something about the way we ask questions that opens up a space. And I got the sense reading it that Brian knows how to ask us, questions that open up a space for us. And we look forward to you doing that with us this afternoon, Brian. No pressure at all. But he's here to talk about something that is really important. Sometimes we think that activism is all about movement and about choice and about moving into action, where the movement into stillness and self is just as important. And we're really grateful that you're helping to balance our program as we think about how we are human in the midst of all that we do. So I've said enough. I'm going to hand over to Brian, and then we'll together work out how we have some conversation with you later. Brian, we're in your hands.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay? Fantastic. It is amazing to be here. We've just got in this afternoon, so I'm taking in the fact that I am back at Greenbelt, and it is really, really lovely. I wanted to weave in one or two contemplative bits into this afternoon, as well as about 35 minutes of talk. So it's great to hear that we've got some competition. We'll be listening for the silence behind it all, maybe, as we go. By way of a preface for today, I co-wrote the book Soulful Nature. This session's called Soulful Nature. And I co-wrote the book Soulful Nature with the botanist Howard Green 4 years ago. So an upfront disclaimer that he's the nature expert, not me. But we have run outdoor retreats together for years and years. And while Howard details all the flora and fauna, and we take groups on walks and to one or two places in particular, I love to weave in the contemplative reflection. And we love to bring the spiritual together again with the so-called material into one soulful whole, because that is where the two surely belong. And I never, ever grow tired of standing, say, by a wellspring in Hampshire with him, with a group of people, seeing 900 liters of chalk aquifer waters rising to the surface and flowing out, and hearing Howard talk about the nature of chalk aquifers and wellsprings, and how people have gathered around that particular wellspring ever since, you know, people were people. It's an amazing thing with a group to just pause by something so ancient and to gather around a source that has been a source of life and refreshment for so long. You don't need any words at a place like that, really, do you? And you'll know some yourself. We mainly sit in quiet humility to listen. But we reflect too on the source within us, which can arise from within our subterranean depths. And I'm always so grateful for the way the natural world on the outside seems to open up the world within us. Anyway, just as the book was launched, the pandemic hit, and we all know what happened after that. So it's lovely to be here finally to actually share a few thoughts that keep flowing from our work there. We actually went on 12 specific walks across the south of England, walking, talking, reflecting on nature and spirituality. And it's great to be sharing a little bit today, and I hope these thoughts release one or two in you. There's so much to say about all this, and yet so very little. When we find ourselves within nature and our own soulful nature rises silently to overflow and meet it. Our family went on holiday this August to a little old farm cottage in France. We were very lucky. It was in the middle of absolutely nowhere but fields, which was bliss for me. No Wi-Fi, which meant a better signal between the four of us and our new habitat for the fortnight, and no light pollution. So on our first night, we sat out under the shooting stars of the Perseid meteor shower. Did anyone else do that? Wasn't it magical? Fantastic. And we told stories, as you do. I don't know why we always tell stories in that kind of setting, but it seems to happen, doesn't it? My wife shared about seeing glowworms in Spain as a child when she went on holiday there, which made the kids gasp. They'd never seen one before. And I realized, I don't think I had either. Who's seen glowworms in the wild? Quite a few of you, and quite a few of you haven't. Well, we thought, wouldn't it be incredibly magical one day to see them? And then lo and behold, just as we were getting ready to go back in from the garden, as so often seems to happen with nature so mysteriously, my sharp-eyed daughter sort of shouted out, "Dad, what's that?" And there, incredibly nestling in the grass, like a star that had fallen to earth, was a single glowworm, one solitary, soulful ember around which we gathered to have our wonder and enchantment rekindled and fanned into flame. I know we can get sentimental about nature, and I didn't mention the mosquitoes in that story. But when we encounter creation profoundly, and you will have your stories of such encounters with wonder and serendipity when you are in nature, don't we get transported somewhere? Don't we get lifted, taken, if you like, or given a glimmer, shall we say, of a waking dream of in the beginning? The indigenous American botanist Robin Wall Kimmerer certainly seems to think so. She tells of how sweetgrass is integral to the creation story of the Potawatomi people to whom she belongs. Breathe in its scent, she says, and you begin to remember things you didn't even know you'd forgotten. What a beautiful mystery. I wonder just how much we have forgotten. And surely we recollect, we recollect something when, say, we smell the salty brine of the sea air, or catch the fragrance of fresh cut grass, or whatever it is in this physical realm that stirs your soul to the waking dream again. I love how our adopted creation story in Genesis 2 links soul to the soil. God shapes a person, Adam, from the earth and breathes spirit into him, and he becomes what the King James Bible translates as a living soul. Soul from the Hebrew word nefesh, meaning the whole of our being. Something greater than the sum of the parts is created in that moment. The parts here being physical matter, the soil, and spirit, God's life-giving breath. In Western culture, we've pulled those two shamefully apart, so spirit doesn't get much of a look in the scientific world, and matter is so often relegated in religion. But there is wholeness in their meeting and embracing in that story. And so soul for me relentlessly connects us to the greater whole of creation, as well as life in God's kingdom, because to be whole is to be part of the whole. which helps to explain for me why my soul stirs when we gather, say, around a tiny ember of a glowworm underneath the magnificence of the canopy of the stars. We didn't even realize we had forgotten what it was like to be part of it all until we remembered, until we were remembered. Maybe just in a moment of quietness, give thanks in your heart for one place where you come to life and find yourself whole within the whole. Go back there for just 10 seconds or so now. Talking of in the beginning, isn't it great how something as simple and natural as our breathing can lead us, in a sense, to our point of origin, our creation, at any moment if we are mindful of it, to it? You might like to close your eyes for a moment and take some, I was going to say take a breath, you're taking a breath anyway. Be aware of your breathing, take some slightly slower, intentional breaths. Always good to bring our focus back to our breathing. Allow that to settle you into this moment, if you like. And now imagine, if you would, that you are being breathed through as if God is doing that breathing for you. As if you are being breathed into life in this very moment, part of creation. And that something in turn is being breathed into life through your being here now at Greenbelt 2024. On the outdoor retreats that I love to lead with Howard in Hampshire, we start by stopping to breathe like that, to step into the space and the place with a soulful reverence. We're not there to get something out of the day, you know, as the ego might crave. I've given up my time, so I'd better get something from this. Instead, we're there to bring ourselves to meet the place with love and to be met. When we approach with reverence, as the great John O'Donohue says, great things decide to approach us. Reverence then means walking slowly when we do set off, treading lightly, lovingly, remembering, along with the Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh, that the real miracle is not to walk on fire or water, but to walk upon the earth. Reverence means activating our senses. Why not, for a moment, close your eyes to notice what you can feel, smell. And it says here what you can hear. And what you can sense. Try for a moment to sense each other's wild, beautiful presence for a moment. And then opening your eyes again, what you can see as if, perhaps for the first time, without putting labels on it. Reverence means bringing our full attention. As the nature poet Mary Oliver says, attention is the beginning of devotion. And in a culture of extreme distraction and doom scrolling, isn't attention a gift to cultivate and give? I was lucky enough once to have a walk in the New Forest with Chris Packham. I was interviewing him for the website High Profiles. Look it up. Do look it up on High Profiles if you want, along with the Ellen MacArthur interview. And moments into our one-to-one walk, he stopped beside a dead tree and began to smell it. He wasn't doing this for cameras. He just began to smell the tree. And that sentence in itself needs unpacking, but we don't have time. And he couldn't help himself. He began to absolutely eulogize about the tessellated patterns like snakeskin of the bark. And he talked of all the life that would continue to live, particularly on the dead wood. And he just mentioned in passing that he can tell what kind of tree is close by simply by the sound that the wind makes within it. Isn't that amazing? We may not attain that level of attention, but just spend 1 minute of pure focus giving your attention, giving, not using it to take, to say brand new translucent leaves on an ancient oak tree in spring. I mean, that's a miracle in itself, isn't it? And by the way, if you're feeling a bit like an ancient oak tree, lightning stricken and a few branches falling off and very gnarly bark, then it's an amazing thing to remember these new translucent leaves. And something can open like a bud within us. Call it devotion. Call it friendship, presence, reciprocity, love. Deep calls to deep, you might say. A tree like that can lead us beyond ourselves, or we might better say beyond our ego, into the more of who we have been created to be, our soulful nature. Because you can't pose to an ancient tree. You might want to try it. But she will meet you with a presence that is so assured and possibly healthily indifferent that you don't have to seek or win her approval. So the restless, insecure ego can settle down if you spend long enough there to make space for the soul to stir and meet the moment. I remember taking half an hour or so with Howard once. We went to Kingly Vale in Hampshire, where there is a grove of some of the oldest yew trees in the country. And I spent half an hour lying on one of the lowest boughs of this yew tree. It was an astonishing moment. I came away somehow reset, having met afresh the me as well as the you. I've been working all week on that one. But it's true. It's true. I'll never forget it. We can encounter a different way of knowing and being when we find ourselves in nature, can't we? I love the poet Denise Levertov, and she writes of a tree standing in someone's back garden, which spends the night fully present to that night, while inside the house, the couple are busying themselves, lights on, preoccupied, distracted. Outside, the tree stands complete with complete surface area presence that she says is a consciousness undefined. I love that, a consciousness undefined. And science has been showing so much more, hasn't it, recently, about trees and how they relate and so forth and so on. And if it's a miracle that fresh green leaves can appear on ancient lightning-stricken oaks in spring, then watching falling leaves in autumn as a meditation, or contemplating acorns whose shiny shells must fall and fade and crack for their fullness to flow out, is surely just as magical and transformative. There is nothing like autumn to remind us, is there, that we are nature after all, lest we forget. From fruitfulness, which is a much more biblical measure of life than your CV, So the cracks which appear on the shiny shell of our life, whether we like it or not. Fear not, sometimes when you think you've been buried, it's a planting, as Christine Kane says so well. Autumn is holy ground, even if it's muddy and mulchy and often melancholy. Beneath our feet, the richness of decomposition, seeds, water, fertility, life awakening to the dream. And though we so often cut ourselves off from the rhythms and seasons and cycles of creation, how good when we do step back onto that holy ground to find we are grounded in the whole again. As we witness, perhaps, if you spend time out there in autumn, that the seeming opposites of light and dark, death and life, spirit and matter, joy and sorrow, were never opposite at all, but part of a whole which holds us together, which holds together, within us and our seasons, even as all things are held together in Christ who made them. There's a hand prayer that the contemplative Christian Philip Roderick developed, which I find incredibly helpful and which I love to do, especially on the equinoxes, actually, if I'm taking people outside. And you might like to do this with me for a moment. You take two polarities and let your hands represent them. So light and dark, as we just edge into closer to autumn. I know it can feel a bit worrying that darkness is lengthening again. Light and dark. And what Roderick says is you just draw those two together slowly and they come together in that sort of prayerful posture. Feel the warmth of the meeting between them. Twist your hands into an embrace as they meet and embrace. Then pull them to your heart. And he says, may the two be reconciled within you as you come home to yourself. We can do that for spirit and matter that we've been talking about that have been pulled apart. Spirit and matter, like that soulful moment of creation in Genesis, coming together. Feel the warmth of their meeting, the embrace. May the two be reconciled within you as you come home to yourself. Life and death is a big one. Imagine doing this out on an autumnal day, just drawing the two together, feeling the warmth of the meeting, the embrace. May the two be reconciled within you as you come home to yourself. On the winter solstice, I've held hands with a group of people, several of them really hurting, on the side of a hill. I mean, I've found that, you know, you take a group outside, everyone's carrying something. Everyone's carrying something. We stood there on the side of a hill and watched the sun go down. And we resolved that the only way out of the darker days of winter was to get into them. So we faced the setting sun and faced into winter, holding hands, actually. Yours is the day, Lord, yours also the night, says Psalm 74. And that act is about embrace, not escape, as so much of spirituality seems to be. Embrace, and a powerful reminder at Christmas time of our Creator's incarnational trajectory into the heart of darkness with love. Someone who came on that retreat told me several weeks later that their husband had been dying at the time and that that retreat had stayed with them every single day in a transformative and somehow healing way. Healing is a word that is often fed back after our outdoor retreats. And it happens at all sorts of different levels in different ways, I think. Not that we're looking for outcomes or being attached to outcomes, but I'm interested to see how often that comes up. There's always an invitation through every passage of the year with the turning of the seasons, the lunar and solar calendars, the liturgical calendar, to bring love and presence, especially to the unloved days, instead of just trying to get through them, to get through them, to get through them. It's said that an ounce of experience is worth far more than a ton of theory. And I found that it's so often an experience in nature that chivvies the so-called spiritual journey along. I don't know about you. We might call them awakenings or epiphanies. Not that we always want to be outside looking for the magic. Being here is so much, as Rilke said. But sometimes there is a mystical encounter that acts as a point of departure. I once had an epiphany as I stood quietly and still among some trees. And as I transferred my focus from the trees to my hands, I realized, as if for the first time, that these were my hands and that I am here. Perhaps you know the poem by David Wagoner called Lost. Stand still. The trees ahead and bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is called here. And you must treat it as a powerful stranger. I've never quite been the same again. Now I try to give my presence back, to turn my I am here to here I am, ready to be more fully part of it all. There's a Hebrew word, hineni, which many of the biblical characters speak in response when God calls to them, hineni, here I am. And it's great to say that to a forest or a river too. It opens up to us a truth told by the eco-theologian Thomas Berry, that the universe is not a collection of objects, but a communion of subjects. Or if I could borrow a phrase from the Catholic theologian Ada Maria Isasi Díaz, we might call it all the kingdom of God, family. And we don't have to get too religious about it, do we? Jesus didn't. Look at the birds of the air, he said. Look and listen for the skylark that sings over 100 notes or consonants per second and never the same thing twice, in what the poet Shelley calls profuse strains of unpremeditated art. Creation's song yearns to be sung through us, through you, uniquely, if we would let it, if we would just park the ego and not worry about whether it's any good or not. Or consider the swallow and its incredible homing instinct, which helps it to find its way 8,000 miles or so and back again. We too have a homing instinct in the form of the push and pull of the soul. Or consider the kingfisher, my favorite bird, I think. I took Claire Balding. I was very, very, very lucky to take Claire Balding for a walk for her Ramblings program once. And we stopped at the river to read Anne Lewin's beautiful poem, Prayer is Like Watching for the Kingfisher, which I thought was a bit of a risk, really. But and I hadn't finished speaking the first line when a neon blue electrifying flash of kingfisher just arrowed straight towards us along the river and seemed to strike us square in the soul. Coincidence, God incidence, synchronicity, serendipity, who knows? Who cares? Whatever's happening there for me is mystery. But I do love the line by the poet Mark Jarman, God is like the hidden waiting to be found. Talking of God, I love how the biblical metaphors are so fluid and naturally immersive. Now, we've got a little caveat here which reminds us not to get too sentimental. God is air, wind, spirit, I wrote. Breathe deep. a reminder too of the wildness of God and the wilderness of our own soulful nature, perhaps, if we have become too domesticated. But God is air, God is light, walk in it. God is living water, dive in, total immersion. We can sometimes seem to get so, okay, I can sometimes seem to get so set on spotting the kingfisher and God in that elusive kingfisher that we miss how we were in the midst of God all along. On our retreats, we stop on a bridge and look down at a crystal clear chalk stream, and there are usually four or five trout facing upstream, and it always reminds me of the story of the two fish who are facing upstream like that when another fish swims by and says, "Morning, boys, how's the water?" And the two fish look at each other and say, "What's water?" But it reminds me too of Mary Oliver sitting on a rock in the middle of the River Clarion, where she's been sitting all day, and gradually she hears what is being said around her. Said the river, "I am part of holiness." "And I too," said the stone. "And I too," whispered the moss beneath the water. There's something I would call sacro-elemental about the physicality of creation, which helps us to be more fully earthed, even as we learn to become citizens of the kingdom of heaven. We're taken back to in the beginning, yet the waking dream draws us onwards too. After the resurrection, the risen Christ, first fruit of the new creation, didn't arrange for himself a cathedral valedictory, but cooked breakfast on a fire he built on a beach for his friends at sunrise. That must be one of the most soulful moments in the Bible. When it comes to soul, what I love is how, while it connects us spiritually to the heights and depths and breadths of maybe how life was always intended, it is forever grounded, earthed in the smell of the Creator's bluebells and garlic in ancient woodland, or the feel of grass beneath bare feet, or the taste of your first autumnal, or is it late summer, blackberry, or indeed of bread broken and wine shared between friends. And we can practice sacro-elemental connection, presence, awakening. Small, repetitive acts, from tending the roses, as I'm sure many of you do, to feeding or watching the birds, to taking a slow walk in silence together. One of the things I loved to do with Howard when we would when we went on these walks was to spend time just walking in silence. And it's amazing how your footfall falls into sync with each other, and then it feels like your breath does, and then your heart, and you are really fully present to each other's presence. Beautiful. You might step outside to look for the pole star at night and just reorientate yourself at different levels, which is what I did a lot through COVID. One way to be really present to what's in front of you is to draw something with your weaker hand. It forces you to see what is there. And as you do so, you don't have to worry about whether it's any good or not, but somehow you come into this deeper presence with what is there. You find a communion. I mentioned at the start that when we launched our book, we were locked down within, well, it was about 2 weeks. And it reminds me, thinking about it now, as I prepared for this, how our world suddenly shrank as we had to stay put. But then how the skies beautifully cleared and how nature came out to play. Was it a waking dream for creation too? I know it wasn't an easy time, but remember how even a single lockdown path was a gift of such great worth. Though we tend to see any limitation as negative, a tighter perimeter can be like an aperture too, an opening of insight and vision onto a world we might otherwise miss in the busyness and rush. Here is where we get to practice life, says the poet Patrick Kavanagh. To know fully even one field or land is a lifetime's experience. It is depth that counts, not width. In a world that is so lost, perhaps we can stand still more often, like the trees, and befriend that powerful stranger called here. I'm reminded of Gilbert White, the naturalist, the 18th century naturalist, who spent 20 years of his life or so studying the nature in the one single parish of Selborne. Have you read the Natural History of Selborne? It was published in 1789 and is still in print and going strong. And he observed minutely when the first swallows came each year, or butterflies, or everything about the flora and fauna. And his careful observation, his presence in that one place, the data has been used by climate scientists to track the changes in the seasons. Maybe one spiritual invitation of climate emergency is to limit our personal range, not as an act of sacrificial austerity, but as a release and opportunity into something deeper, richer. Our letting go of old, familiar ways need not be the end of the world. As Richard Bach says, what the caterpillar calls the end of the world, the master calls a butterfly. I am convinced, I am absolutely convinced that the churches, Christians, people of faith across the country and the world can contribute hugely and help to lead the way in this respect. Turn parochial into a positive word again, maybe. Beat the bounds afresh. Befriend the flora and fauna of our patch. Remap our world in gospel oaks and tributaries and help to re-enchant it too, as well as in urban trees and city parks and favourite benches and soulful cafes. Know our place within creation, humbly and in love. But we will need to get over one or two nagging things, like the Christian hangover, say, about pantheism. God is not the tree, and surely we all know that by now. But the tree is shot through with God's DNA, just as you and I are. For the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. And there are no unsacred places, as the farmer poet Wendell Berry says. There are only sacred places and desecrated places. Of course, we're not worshipping the tree if we approach with reverence. We are bringing love to the so often unloved, cultivating kinship, glimpsing more of the wilder natural presence of who we were in the beginning and who indeed we can become. And as we acknowledge that we stand on holy ground, whether it's in a meadow in springtime or a mud bath in winter or a field near Kettering at Greenbelt, somewhere in between, I believe we begin, as we stand on that holy ground, a process of re-consecration in love and, yes, in rage where necessary. We didn't see the glowworm again. That is, not until our final night, when we were feeling very sad to be leaving that small patch of soulful nature in France, which for a fortnight we had the privilege of sharing with hares and toads and bee-eater birds and stars and crickets serenading. And on that final night, the glowworm appeared once more, like an ember, like a sign, I would like to think, like the hidden, wanting to be found, like family. Thank you. thank you so much. There are so many interesting people gathered at an important gathering like this. And whilst you are free to ask me questions about retreats and connections and things like that, or anything that I've said, it feels like it would be a wonderful opportunity to briefly share any stories that you might have of what you're doing to reconnect, anything that's going on that you feel is part of the conversation. Let's do that if you've got anything.
Yep. Thank you. So we've got about 15 minutes to do that. I have a microphone and it goes just so far. So if you do want to say something, you'll need to come to the microphone. And can I just reiterate what Brian has said? However passionate you are and however convoluted your story, try and keep it brief so that someone else has a turn as well after you. And I'll be choosing who speaks. If I leave you out, you can come shout at me afterwards. But it's important also to mix up demographics in terms of age or gender as we perceive that, whatever. So who wants to start? Who has a story? Who has a place they go or a practice or a... What helps you know that you are you in the way that Brian is describing or adventuring with that? Or have you just stunned them all? Here you are.
Every morning at the beginning of lockdown, I was terrified at the sight of the Italians stuck in their flats and not being able to get out. Mm. I thought, I can cope with this lockdown business as long as I can get out. And I made a promise to God that every morning that I could get out of my flat, I would go to a particular yew tree in my local park and give thanks. And that became Morning Tree. And in the evening, there's a yew tree just across the path from the Morning Tree. And it has, so Morning Tree has no branches. It's just got, has no bottom branch. It's just got big branches. And Evening Tree, which is the one opposite that, the other side of the path, has a little branch that you can sit on. And I would go there every evening to give thanks for getting through the day, everything that had happened. And I can say to this day, I've never missed a day since.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Amazing. Thank you. Thanks so much. That's beautiful. Thank you.
So I too have a tree. It's about 400-year-old oak, and it's on one of my favourite walks, which we now call the COVID walk, unfortunately, because that's the walk we did every day in COVID. And I can sometimes be found just either leaning against it or giving it a really big hug. Maybe it gives me a hug, I'm not sure, but it never, ever moves. And that level of just intense structure of being there for 400 years, it's seen everything. There's nothing that comes in my life that that tree hasn't seen.
Thank you. Thank you. It hasn't moved, but it's also been on an amazing journey through four seasons every year too, which is the beautiful extra dimension to that not moving, isn't it?
Yeah, just to say thanks so much for what you said. For me, I've been searching what is for me to do in this climate crisis. And the one thing that has come again and again is, because I teach mindfulness, is to do mindfulness in nature. And for a long time, I resisted it because I felt this is so small. It felt so small. And in the last 2 or 3 months, I've started. And I'm just amazed. It feels like it's a gift to me. And there's so many things I could say. And I'm amazed at what it means to others. So
thank you so much. Please keep going with that. We bring our gift. We use our gift. Yeah, thank you.
Hi, thanks. I was reminded as you were speaking of a time when my children were really, really young. And we'd gone on holiday to Scotland, and I had a moment where my husband was like, you go out, you have a break. And I went and got lost in a forest. And as I walked, I just started to listen, and I heard some running water, and I didn't know where it was coming from. And I followed the sound. And I couldn't even see where this water was, and all of a sudden the land dropped. And there was like a stream coming out from under a tree, and then it pooled underneath it. And I climbed down and I sat there, and this, and the, you know, when the rays dapple through the leaves, and it was just this moment of, like you said earlier, of being absorbed and like remembered into creation. And as I've like just been reflecting on that now, I'm thinking of the importance of listening, of like walking and listening, and not just listening, but then like following that sound. And I don't know whether that speaks to anybody, but I just thought I would, I just thought I would share that because that's what came to mind.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I find it really helps to leave phones at home or turn them completely off, because you know, if you know it's on, you can kind of feel wired into that. To actually go out and tune in a different way is, yeah, really helpful. Thank you.
Hi. What to say? Excuse me. I don't suppose I'm alone in carrying some grief at the minute. Excuse me. Yeah. For the first few days or weeks of the grief, I'm very fortunate to live very rurally. And for the first few weeks, I couldn't believe that the birds kept singing. I was just like, why? Why are the birds singing? And actually, the birds singing and the gentleman about the tree, I'm a tree hugger. I encourage everybody to hug a tree. But the thing about trees is that they're immovable, but also there's all this biology going inside them. There's all this movement inside them that just carries on. And I've just found that I'm not healed yet, but it's so powerful. The birds sing and the trees do their biology, and we're each a nexus point within this wonderful ecosystem, and it's just a miracle. Yeah. And I don't have a point, but just it's amazing, and we're so lucky. And thank you for your words.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Thank you. Peace be with you.
I was just going to say something about the unexpected blessings of nature, that sometimes we go on a retreat or a walk and we're kind of hopeful that we're going to see the kingfisher or the firefly or whatever it is. In the communion service this morning, all of a sudden, just sitting there waiting for stuff to start, there was this dragonfly. It was one of the really big ones. It was blue and yellow striped. I've got no idea what it was, but it flew around our group kind of really low in between everybody, like it was about to land. And it's one of the things that's going to stick with me from this green belt, the unexpected blessing of nature.
Yeah. Yeah, wonderful. Thank you. That's lovely.
When you were talking about when you were talking about breath, one of the things, actually, I've been following your Lent courses for a few years now, and a couple of years ago you talked about using the breath and going for a walk, and as you're walking with your breath, saying, with the right foot, amen, left foot, glory, glory, amen, glory, amen. And I went off to the Lake District and I went climbing and walking by myself for a couple of days. And I thought, right, I'm going to use this opportunity for some contemplative walking and try and let go of everything else that's going on in my mind. And as I was going up this very steep mountain, soon, very, very quickly, the words dropped away, but my breath was there. Mm. And that breath was that prayer. Even when the words weren't possible, I was breathing. At the time, I didn't realise the significance of it. I got home from that mountain retreat and I found out a dear friend had passed away. Mm. And I spent the week breathing because I had no words for that grief. Mm. But God had met me in the mountains, in the tough uphill bits. And it was almost a reminder, though, 2 days beforehand, that actually breath is prayer. And that met me in the grief that I needed. And so I just want to say thank you. That was 2 years ago for what you've been sharing in your work and the contemplative rhythms you have been sharing in terms of that combination of nature and seeing God in that too. So, yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Could we just pause just for one moment? I'm really conscious that when we talk about this sort of stuff, it really does, our grief and our struggle and our challenges are very, very close to the surface. I wonder whether we could just pause for 30 seconds, closing our eyes, taking a breath, holding anyone we know who is in grief, or offering ourselves to God, feeling the breeze, taking a breath. One of the most incredible things that I experience on our outdoor retreats is simply the presence of each other. So drawing strength from each other's unspoken presence that we tuned into earlier. Grateful for the strength that we will draw from each other, from this gathering, this festival, and onwards through the year in humility and love.
I was really moved by your talk. Recently when I was on holiday in a mountainous region, I went for a walk one day by myself and found a small pool, and the river was coming down the rocks, and I was feeling very anxious and stuck in my own head, and I was going to go to a cafe, but I thought, I'm just going to sit here for 5 minutes. It turned into an hour. I just sat, I watched the nature doing its thing. The usually what you would find annoying little flies that kind of sit on the water and skirt around. Watermen? I don't know. I realized that there was these beautiful shadows underneath them that were creating all these spots and shadow and light. And then I noticed all sorts of nature life coming out as I was still and was receptive to that. And that brought me out of myself in such a way that I felt such peace afterwards. And I think that's something I've been missing for a long time. Mm. And I'd say that's something that nature can really do to you, is bring yourself out of yourself in a way by, when you are still, it speaks, and you never knew it was speaking because you were so busy trying to be busy. Mm.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. I've spent the last couple of years retraining, and to be a psychotherapist, and it's a tough old gig, and yeah, I've kind of struggled my way through it and stumbled upon taking myself out into nature as a way of kind of holding my stuff and also some of the stuff that my clients brought from placement, and realizing how much nature kind of held me, and then kind of through that thinking, you know, connection's really important. It's some of the stuff that goes wrong, and what makes people broken is that kind of broken connection, maybe with other people and themselves and stuff. And then thinking, yeah, but hold on, there's this thing that's missing, which is connection with nature as well. And so I've just done eco-psychotherapy course.
Oh, wow.
So I can kind of combine psychotherapy and the natural world and that connection with people and the kind of the transpersonal, the spiritual, and with nature, and it all kind of comes together. And just so much of what you said echoes some of the stuff that I've been thinking and reading and stuff that I did on my course, and it's just, and it's lovely to have this kind of, yeah, the Christian spiritual side of it as well. It all just feels like it's coming together.
Fantastic. That's wonderful.
And it's awesome. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. I don't know how many of you saw, I mean, we had that beautiful communion service this morning that was just so intensely moving. And at the end of it, a buzzard or a red kite just swept, a sort of red kite, just swooped over us, almost like as a blessing at the end. So I just want to say thank you. Thank you for the retreat I went on with you in May. Just absolutely stunning. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you so much for all those comments. Let's remember within it all that as we draw deep, you know, as you spend time with a tree, I mean, I love to look through the space between the branches, the branches and the leaves, and it's like a cathedral kind of space opens up, and the inside is so connected to the outside that a space begins to open up in me, and I think in others when you do that, and that begins to almost overflow, so that we carry with us away from an encounter like that a hospitality, a spaciousness. And let's remember that that sense of reciprocity, that as we draw close to nature and find ourselves connected again, that we can both carry that goodness with us and ensure that it's a reciprocal nature that we have with creation. Can I just say, if you are interested in the email series that I do, I don't just lead outdoor retreats, I do often nature and spirituality based seasonal email series, you can sign up at briandraper.org. There's a mailing list, and I will be signing books, Soulful Nature books, at 4:30, wherever it is in the bookshop.
So, in the process of wrapping up, just a few observations, if I may. The energy in this tent has moved and shifted over this weekend in all kinds of ways, but it hasn't been here yet in the way you've brought us into the space. We've had lots of energy around activism and passion and intensity and care and the giving away of ourselves and the diminishing of ourselves for the earth. And you've invited us into a different space, Brian, and I'm very grateful for that. You've invited us into our absurd little lives in a way that helps us feel the preciousness of them, but hold them gently as nature speaks to us. I also wonder if there's something about disruption that invites us into that. You mentioned the pandemic, and we would never say the pandemic was a gift, but I think the pandemic did bring gifts to people, awarenesses, Sabbath, nature, in its disruptive nature. And maybe you've felt a bit disrupted this afternoon, or massively affirmed, I don't know which. Greenbelt should disrupt all of our lives each year in some way. And in whatever way you've particularly done that for people today, we're grateful for that. I'm going to ask you to do two things. The first one is I'm going to ask you to applaud enthusiastically for Brian as we finish the session. You're going to sign books at 4 o'clock. 4:30. Are you happy to hang around here a bit after, or do you need to be somewhere else? You're happy to hang around a bit. So if you want to come and chat to Brian, do that. But after we've applauded Brian enthusiastically, I'm going to invite you, Brian, again, just to lead us into some stillness. And whenever you've finished that, don't feel like you need to tiptoe away and you can't talk to anyone around you, but it feels appropriate that we finish in stillness rather than in noise. Is that okay? Hang around, chat. Be aware of the people around you as we finish. We've heard some very powerful stories, just glimpses into people's lives. Who knows what's sitting next to you? Who knows what's sitting inside you? And we give thanks for each other in that as well. But as we finish the session and as our competition begins again, thank you for coming. I hope the Greenbelt finishes well for you. But for this moment and this energy and this invitation and this disruption, Brian, we want to say thank you to you. So let's applaud Brian.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.